hear the sound of a mighty rushing wind.
Welcome to Issues of Life on Spirit 88.3 FM. 60 minutes of news, prophecies, music, and the Word every Saturday from 8 to 9 p.m. Get revived, inspired, motivated, and warned about the times you're living in. Prophecies of old are unfolding right before our eyes every day. Verses in the Bible are today's headline news. Don't be ignorant, but be an informed believer. Join Brother Eben for the next 60 minutes and be blessed. Get this edition and others from spiritissues.info.
We'll be going home.
Good evening to all listeners. This is Eben. Thank you for tuning in to Spirit 88.3 FM. I'll be with you from now till 9 p.m. So it's a privilege to come your way. We thank God for a new month, and we are having the second edition of February in this month. And this evening we are looking at the news, and then we continue the series we've been on, Beyond the Prayer and the Fasting. And I believe it's something that is very important that we have to look at, because at the beginning of the year there's a lot of prayer and fasting all over, but then beyond that, what next? And that's one of the things we are looking at in this short series that I started. So we'll be continuing this evening, but first we're looking at the news and then we move on from there. So greetings to listeners wherever they are. Okay, so it's been recorded to be uploaded. Looks like we have a problem with the streaming this evening, so listeners outside unfortunately will have to fall on the recording later. Okay, so let's look at the news. We have top courts to hear cases against Turkey, labeling Christians as security threats. So Christians have been labeled as security threats. So the European Court of Human Rights has opened proceedings in 20 cases involving Christians barred from re-entering Turkey after being designated as national security threats. The individuals, mostly foreign residents, say they were denied entry or residence solely for peacefully practicing their faith. And so Turkey, you know, they've labeled the Christians as national security threats, and they've started threatening to deport believers or Christians, according to human rights groups. And Christians in Turkey now face the rise of hate crimes and government crackdowns. You know, there's been an uptick and a sharp rise in Christian persecution in a lot of countries. And even countries where Christians were at peace, seemingly at peace, and suddenly things seem to be against Christians, and there's this hatred for anything Jesus, anything God kind of thing. And Christians are the first to bear the brands, and then the Jews are also another group. So the Christians and the Jews are being, you know, victimized and targeted in various countries. And it's very unfortunate. But, well, you know, the Bible gave us a hint that these are some of the things that will happen. So we shouldn't be surprised when these things also happen. Then the U.S. says they've sent some troops to Nigeria to bring unique capabilities amid the ISIS fight. Interesting. So the U.S. has deployed military team to Nigeria as part of a growing effort to assist in counterterrorism operations against Islamic State-linked terrorists. The move marks the first publicly acknowledged presence of American forces on the ground following U.S. airstrikes in Nigeria on Christmas Day. And in the same Nigeria this week, they had this bloody attack. And you know, this issue of how it's such a serious thing, because what happened in this case was, you know, it was largely Muslims that were killed. This attack that happened over 160 almost years, so killed. But this is the reality of the report. Now, more than 100 armed jihadists dressed in army fatigues rode into a neighboring Muslim villages of Woro and Nuku in Nigeria's western state of Kwara on motorbikes driven by revenge. They came en masse in the name of religion, and they decided to kill our people, Abdullah Umar Usman, a former teacher and resident of Woro, told the BBC, explaining how the attack, in which at least at that time 75, but later the number rose to over 160, are so far known to have been killed, unfolded, how it unfolded. The mayhem started an hour before sunset on Tuesday as residents of the farming community were heading home from their fields, where they grow yams, maize and millet. The militants headed straight to the home of traditional leader Umar Bio Salihu because they had written to him asking if they could come and preach what is considered an extremist version of Islam, which the community did not welcome. Salihu was not at his home in Woro at the time, so they set his compound alight and killed two of his children. Two of the community head's children, who were medical students, were killed in front of the house before they set it ablaze, Uman said. The jihadists then went on a killing spree that lasted all night, killing more than 160 people. So they had sought to come and preach their radical doctrine of Islam in the communities, and the tribesmen, the leaders resisted it, they opposed, they didn't give them the hearing or a time to come, because they are not interested in that extreme one. And this is what angered them. Okay, so if you not allow us to come and preach and bring our doctrine, then this is what happens. And so they killed them for refusing to embrace radical Islamism. And this is just something else. It's really, 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 really something. You know, human beings just being killed as if it's too bad. Then we go to Pakistan. We have Pakistan court gives Muslim kidnapper custody of 13-year-old Christian girl. You know, this news, sometimes you read some news, you see some news items, and your mind is just... You know, Pakistani federal court decided this week to give custody of a 13-year-old Christian girl to a Muslim man who kidnapped, forcibly converted, raped and married her in August 2025. Maria Shabazz's parents were devastated at the ruling on Tuesday after the two-judge bench of the newly constituted Federal Constitutional Court, FCC, rejected their official birth record and disregarded earlier judicial findings that the marriage was illegal. The ruling came in an atmosphere of intimidation as 150 male friends and family members of the rapist had arrived to the court to support him. Justice Karim Aga and Justice Said Hassan Azza accepted Maria's statements, which her parents and their attorney say was given under coercion, that she had converted to Islam and married 30-year-old Shewa Ahmad of her own free will. We were hopeful that the court would consider the girl's official birth documents and the sessions in court order confirming that the accused had contracted an illegal marriage with a minor, her parents' lawyer said. He also said the court had failed to consider the girl had remained in custody of the suspect for more than 6 months, increasing the probability of coercion. The judges should have taken into account that she was likely to give a statement in the accused's favor under duress, he said. He is deeply disappointed that the court did not provide a safe and conducive environment for recording her testimony. The girl's father said that his neighbor, Ahmed, had abducted his daughter when she stepped outside her home to go to a nearby shop. Human rights advocates say such cases follow a recurring pattern in Pakistan, where girls, some as young as 10, are abducted, forcibly converted, and sexually abused under the cover of Islamic marriages. Victims are often pressured to record statements favoring their abductions, while courts frequently disregard documentary evidence of age and return the children to their alleged kidnappers as legal wives. In Punjab, Maria's home state, the legal minimum age of marriage for girls is 16. At the national level, the Christian Marriage Amendment Act 2024 raised the marriageable age to 18 for Christians. However, if Christian girls convert to Islam, they are treated as Muslims under Sharia, which allows marriage to younger age. You know, I wonder how the parents will be going through this, where, I mean, you see your neighbor has just kidnapped your daughter, a minor, 13 years, and the court has agreed to it that it's fine, it's okay. No, sometimes religion, what religion does to human beings, there are no words to describe it. I mean, how can this be allowed in a normal human system? How? And you won't accept the birth certificate from the parents. You know, I mean, you just marvel as to how institutions like a court would ignore a legal document, formal documents from the parents, that this is our daughter, this is the birth certificate. You say no, you won't recognize it. You just accept the fact that, well, she is married to this man and she's okay with it, so that is it. No, this world. Okay, but their behavior is not far from what is happening in Afghanistan. Taliban legalizes slavery, steps up suppression of women and girls. So the Taliban has codified slavery and formalized a class-based justice system in Afghanistan through a newly approved criminal procedure code signed by its supreme leader. And so the legal experts and international rights groups say the new law strips away due process and institutionalizes privilege based on gender, religion, and social status. The Taliban has now approved a return of slavery in Afghanistan. We must defund the Taliban, Jim Risch, Republican, Idaho, and the chairman of the U.S. Senate Foreign Relations Committee, wrote on X. Not only is it counter to U.S. interests and an affront to all military members who served there, but the Taliban continue to slide further backwards. The 119 article code, which includes references to free persons and slaves, divides Afghan society into four categories, namely the religious scholars, elites, middle class, and lower class, each of which faces different penalties for the same crimes. Reports the human rights organization Rawadari. So a cleric receives advice, while someone from the lower class may receive both imprisonment and corporal punishment. I mean, what type of justice system is this? Someone will just receive an advice, go and sin no more, whilst others will be caned and then also sent to prison for the same offense. Oh, this world. And, you know, it goes on and on. And you see, they have banned girls and women from working, from going to school. I mean, virtually, they are living in a stone age. And because of this, there's a lot of suicide. The girls are committing suicide because, like, some are seeing life as now worthless. Because what is the use of life where you can't do anything? And especially for those who were living normal lives, they were going to school before the Taliban took over again. And it's like a complete shift of freedom into servitude, slavery. You can't, if you're a woman or a girl, whatever, female, you can't go out without a male companion who should be a relative. And I keep wondering, so what if in your family you don't have any male relative? Does it mean you can't go out? I mean, music has been banned. There's no music. If you dance, you can be caned. You can even be taken to prison for dancing. I mean, radio players and all is banned. The music is an offense. It's a crime to listen to music. And, you know, it's like the whole country is a prison. No freedom. Oh, no. Some people are suffering, no. Okay. So we go to the U.S. and a mother demands that big tech accountability. You know, the big tech, we talk of the big companies, the Google, Meta, Facebook, the mother company, then, you know, X, all these, TikTok and all, they all fall under the big tech group. So the mother is demanding the big tech accountability. Says federal law is blocking justice for deceased son. A California mother whose 16-year-old son died by suicide following severe cyberbullying, ignored joined by anti-sexual exploitation advocates and bipartisan lawmakers in demanding the reform of Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, which they say big tech uses as a loophole to avoid accountability for distributing offensive or explicit content. Christine Bright, who lost her son, Carson, in 2020, said during a Wednesday news conference in the U.S. Capitol that Section 2030 has prevented her from achieving justice for her son. According to the mother, Carson ended his life after cyberbullies harassed him through YOLO, an anonymous application integrated into Snapchat. YOLO opened up a pop-up screen promising that it would monitor cyberbullying and reveal and ban abusers, Bright said. Yet the last search on Carson's phone before he ended his life was for hacks to find out who was doing this to him. "This was the darkest day of my life," she added. The mother wants legal recourse for her son's death, but one attorney that she met told her that Section 2030 made social media companies immune to lawsuits. Nearly 6 years later, Bright is still fighting a legal battle in federal court, but Section 2030 is preventing technology companies from being held accountable. "I urge lawmakers to prioritize meaningful Section 2030 reform. It is essential that tech companies are held accountable for the safety of their products, like every single industry in America," Bright stated. "In this way, we can finally protect families from these preventable tragedies." You know, I was in Accra this week for a conference, and, you know, it's such a worry as to how these big tech companies are playing smart on, you know, on the world, let me put it that way. Because you see an issue where, you know, so it was the National Online Safety Summit, and so it was February 3rd and 4th. And all the big people regarding the internet and all that, the Cybersecurity Authority, the CID, the, you know, it was organized, the main organizer was the Ghana Internet Safety Foundation, then the Cybersecurity Authority, and then a whole lot of other groups were there. But then, you know, I was angry when, you know, that same day, apparently, TikTok were having a conference in Accra as well for, you know, they call it, I mean, something, youth something. You know, it's, but virtually what they've done is they've intentionally created, they've set up an office and all that, as if they care about the effect of it on the youth and the children and youth or teenagers and all that. And, you know, so the leader of that the Africa group, the one, the head of that youth group that they've created, like youth monitoring, advocacy type of thing, he was also at the conference to give a speech. And I was just wondering and telling myself, see, why should you make provision
to help these people to use it safely when they shouldn't even be there in the first place. The teenagers are not, why they shouldn't even be there on TikTok. But instead of rather stopping them, you've created an avenue to pretend as if you care about them and so you are trying to do something. But the ordinary user who is in Kumasi, for instance, a young teenager, 13, 12, 11, 10, 9, using TikTok in Kumasi, I mean, does he even know about this group you've created to help them how to use it responsibly? See, the harm is being caused. And instead of confronting it that, yes, what Australia has done, banning below 16 from using all these systems to protect their mental health, it's time other countries come up with the same. And it's like at the world level, all countries ban these below 16 from using any form of social media completely. The Australia one, the report is interesting. After they banned this, the teenagers from using the social media systems, there's been a sharp rise in academic performance. There's been a good relationship in terms of the teenagers or the children, teenagers, whatever, their relationships with their siblings, with their parents, with their friends. And it just confirms the harm that these things were causing. And it should be obvious that all countries should just agree to do so. Australia has set the right example, and every country should go that way, because we can't pretend that these things are not harming the children. It is really harming them. And the last news item is quite a very disturbing one. When I read it this week, I was in Accra when I saw the news, and I was so disappointed in how we are looking on and lives are being destroyed. Three Indian sisters jumped to their deaths after parents took away their mobile phone because they were sick of the girls' obsession with Korea and gaming. So, three Indian sisters who jumped to their deaths after their parents confiscated their phone have been pictured. And siblings, Paki, 12, Prachi, 14, and then Vishika, 16, gathered at their 9th floor balcony at Bharat City and Ghaziabad around 2:15 a.m. on Wednesday before jumping one after the other in a tragedy that has rocked the country. Local reports claim the girls' screams were so loud they woke their parents and neighbors, but the time the parents broke their door, it was too late. The devastated mother and father later found their 8-page suicide note in a pocket diary, which included chilling messages about their love for Korea and their beliefs that their parents were attempting to quell their obsession. "How will you make us leave Korean? Korean was our life. So how dare you make us leave our life? You didn't know how much we loved them. Now you've seen the proof. Now we have convinced that Korean and the K-pop are our life," the note read. Apparently, you know, they love everything Korea, like the life, Korea life. Yeah, Indians in India, but they love Korea song, which you call the K-pop. I mean, and it's like that's all their obsession, and then gaming, games. So the parents got fed up with this whole obsession for the K-pop, the Korea life, everything Korea online, and the gaming thing. So they took their phones, and the results is what's happened. The three girls killed themselves. You know, this phone thing, it's becoming a worry, which it's high time parents really paid attention to this call. I mean, during the summit in Accra that I was in, and the reports by the CID, the Cybersecurity Authority, the UN, UNESCO in this case, yeah, but still UN anyway. But, you know, the reports are very worrying. very, very worried. And seriously, parents have to understand that if they truly love their children, giving them unlimited access to phones is the worst thing that you've done for your child. If you love your child, below 16, let me put it that way, you give them their own phone, smartphone, I mean, to be precise in this case, then, you know, based on all that I know now and all that what I know because of what I do, my work and the reports and all the things I know about these things, the truth is you don't love your child. You think you love, but if you know what I know, I would say you don't love them. Because, see, you are virtually putting poison in your child's hand and just hoping that the poison will not kill your child. That's what a lot of parents are doing by giving their phones, buying phones for their children. And, you know, because the reports from neuroscientists, how it is affecting their brain setup, the neurons in their brain is being rearranged, is affecting them in so many ways. Their thinking is making them, there's no good report out there from the neuroscientists to the psychologists to clinical or whatever. There's no good report out there. So this phone thing, buying phones for children, is a complete no-no. I mean, there's no negotiation about it. If it's about communication, a yam can still be used to communicate. So that is barely the issue. I mean, as to buying phones that gives them the freedom, internet, social media, doing their TikTok and all that, you are harming them. Oh, yes. And you see, the effect of what is happening now will be seen in the next few years. And that is where parents and then the society at large will realize the harm we have caused ourselves. I was glad when Finland, that was a pace setter in digital learning, they started the major campaign, digital learning, a few years ago. They made a U-turn and said that, no, we've made a mistake. Let's go back to the books. Oh, yes, I was very glad when they did so. And it's for good reason. They saw that they are rather harming their children and not helping them. So I don't know how to describe it, but I feel so worried when our governments, not only this government, but previous, and then now it's also continuing the policy, you know, like giving tablets to the SHS to use. It's like those who started this have seen that it's not helping, and they've taken it out and they've brought in the books again. And we are now, when others have tried it and have seen the consequences, not just the consequences just on the surface, but scientifically proven that the thing is harming them than rather helping them. For whatever reason, we have now decided that this is the way we want to go with our senior high school. And, you know, there's no way you can put it again that say that we are not helping our children. We are harming them. We are harming them out of ignorance, out of, our love for money. Because some decisions are taken just based on somebody's money that they will make. So, well, let's go and buy it. Let's do it. But what about the health, the mental health, the psychosocial and all these things, impact that is having on the children? At the workshop, the summit, I was told of a case, I heard of a case where one government school, the headmistress bumped into a number of students. They were watching pornography during class time and all that. So they had to seize the tablets from them. And, I mean, you hear these things and you just marvel that who in his right senses would approve that let's give these children the tablets without encrypting portions, ensuring that it can't be used openly as they are using now. It's like you just take it from the box and give it to them to use it just like that. Why would you do that? I mean, why anyone would think of such? I can't imagine. I can't. Because it doesn't make sense in any way that you just give it to them without blocking some things. But that is, they've just given it to them. Go and use it freely. And we are harming them. We are harming them. And the effects of it is down the line. Where, I mean, the reports are showing. Now you have some children or youngsters, they get into university. Some can't read even a full sentence. They can't read a full sentence. It's like something is wrong. People are getting A1s in the very subject that they got the A1s. They get to the university. The professors are wondering how they got the A1s because they can't solve even the basic things in that same course that they claim they have A1. And we are still not worried and seeing, if not at all, the WASI results that came last year should have been the wake-up call. But as a country, we are not serious. Because if we were really serious, there should have been a serious parliamentary committee to probe this. All the stakeholders to give their, you know, inputs. I mean, a serious probe should have gone into the results that we had last year to ascertain the actual cause of it and know the way forward to stop or whatever, reduce the effects and whatever. But as a country, we just talk. You know, Ghana, there is just 1 week. That's all it takes, 1 week for a news to trend. And then a big one comes by and that's it. That one is forgotten. Then we all move to the next one. Then it's like no one talks about it again. And yet, this is a very serious issue. Extremely serious. And the effect, for that WASI results one, I will say it and I always say it. There are two major factors. But sadly, those two factors are not being talked about. You hear all the blames. Blame WAEC, blame GES, blame the school, blame the teachers, blame the children. But the two major factors, I rarely heard people talk about it. Number one, parents. Number two, phones and tablets. These were the two major reasons. If we are being sincere and if we are to probe well, it will come to these two major reasons. Sadly, no one is talking about these two. And until we address it, we are deceiving ourselves. We are going to have a worse situation with our children where their mental health, their social life, all these things will be compounded in the years ahead. And we are going to have the youth who virtually are going to be robots who cannot think for themselves. It's already happening. We are seeing youth who virtually are acting like, I mean, they can't think for themselves. They can't think for themselves. But the problem, we know. So, okay, some know, but it's not everybody who knows. We know the problem, but we are refusing to deal with it. That's why I talk about this a lot, because it's a real worry to me. The reports I read and all that, it's like you see it playing out. I'm seeing it playing out. But how much can you do? The few people who listen to me and who would act on it, they can save their children and they will save their families. But on a larger scale, we are harming ourselves as a society. We are harming ourselves as a society. And I call on pastors, I call on church elders, deacons, Sunday school teachers, church leaders, and all. This issue is not something to be taken lightly. if we don't address it, we are going to be confronted by it in a negative way that we didn't expect. When the children begin to leave the faith, when they get to university and they start questioning the faith, when they finish university and they start wondering, is it worth being a Christian? When they start saying all sorts of abominable things and they leave the faith and all that, the reason will be the foundation that was weakened by this same thing I'm talking about. You know, the devil is not a joker. Never underestimate the devil. They know the game they are playing. They know the game and the effects and the results they will get. They just don't do things. No. They've set everything in motion and there is showing. We are seeing the effects and the outcome. But the church is not seeing it. The church is way asleep. The church cannot see afar. That the ultimate effect is this, that we are going to have youth who will be so weak in their minds that they will begin to question their faith. Any wind of doctrine that will come, they will be blown by it, because they are not critical thinkers. And the question is, what happened? The same thing I'm talking about, the devices and this impact on them. The foundation is being destroyed by these same things. And yet when you say it, oh, it doesn't matter. But then, years down the line, the difference will be clear. The children whose parents were able to train them well in the fear of God and then in restricting devices at home, there will be a sharp difference in their output in life, in their mental health, in their critical thinking, in their social life, their marital life and everything. It will not be the same as those who are being destroyed by this poisonous canker called the devices. But when you warn, it's not everybody who understands. It's not everybody who sees it. So some think, oh, it doesn't matter. I was told something in Accra. So sad. I've said it here before of another parent, but I heard another case in Accra. The Kumasi one, a man, the 2-year-old child was having speech difficulties. So he told my friend, Ghana Internet Safety Foundation, one of the leaders. And his first question was, does the child have a tablet? And the man said, yes. He said, take the tablet away. And within a week or two, the child started talking. Because the speech delay was being caused by the tablets. The child was so engaged in the colors, the games, the tablet, whatever he's learning or seeing. So it's making the child not talk. Took the tablet away and the child started talking. What I was told in Accra, I felt sad because the same issue, but this time the child is 7 years. But they got to know that was the cause when the child was, 7 years. So the harm has been caused over a longer period. Unlike the 2-year-old child who, because 2 years, so the formative age of the brain and all those things were still going on. The 7-year-old one, the harm has been caused over a longer period. So even though after they saw a therapist and the recommendation was they should take the tablets away and all that, the child is still not talking. And I was like, you know, this is an avoidable harm that the parents have caused. Unavoidable harm. If the tablet was not in that house, that child would be a normal child now talking. But because of a tablet, now look at the difficulty they have to deal with. You know, but when you say it, I assume maybe somebody would have warned, oh, this tablet that you are letting your child, everyday tablet, oh, They will brush it away. Oh, it doesn't matter. And they will say it in their heads. Ah, we can afford to buy. If you can't afford, you are complaining. That's how some people say it. Some think it's like they can afford it. So what's the big deal? I mean, you are complaining because maybe you cannot afford. So, but you see, this world is not, if you, it's all about what you can afford, then you'll be deceiving yourself. You know, I didn't intend to spend much time on this, but for whatever reason, I know it's going to help some people or someone. That's why I decided to spend some time on it, because it's a very critical issue. Oh, yes. It's a critical issue that we cannot pretend that the thing is not harming the children. Even adults cry, the effects are there. I mean, one day I'll talk about it. Even adults are struggling, the effects on adults. How much more the children? How much more the children? How much more the children? If you love your child, you know, perhaps you've given it to them already and all that, but you have to now undo the harm. So get back to the drawing board. Sit with the child. Explain everything to the child that for their own good, you are going to restrict and give them access on a limited basis. You know, the first thing is you don't let the child agree or know that this is their property. This is your gift. This is for you. No, it shouldn't be for them. It's for the family. And you, the adults, give it to them when you agree. It's like, it's there. But until you give it to them, it's not something that's like, this is for me, so I can use it anyhow and any time I want. I just, they keep it in their room, it's their property, and all. No. That's not the way to go in the first place. The first way to solve it is the first place. The parents should take control of it. And then you give it to them. You know, the scientific, agreed time is... screen time across a day, 24 hours, science is showing that not more than 2 hours a day. And the screen time includes even TV. That whole screen time for a day that now is recommended is not more than 2 hours in a day. So you, the parent, then you now agree with the child that this is the new rule about the usage of tablets or phones in the house. You don't go beyond this period. Agree or forget it. And that is it. You see, but this is where communication has to come in. Because look at what happened in the India case. The parents took their phone and they committed suicide. I told you of this last 2 years. I also shared the news. 3 girls, their mother put off the Wi-Fi because of the games. And 3 girls, they 2 teenagers, took knives and chased their mother from the house. Their grandmother was on the way. They pushed her aside and hurt her. Because, you see, this is happening. These are the realities. So when you hear it elsewhere, don't think, oh, it is them. No. It will amaze you what is happening in Ghana and even in Kumasi here. I know of someone, the child was a very, I know the family. A good boy, a nice child, everything fine. The parents bought this game machine, the home now. And now the child has changed. When now the parents talk about it, that he's playing this too much and all, he should stop playing. Now this child is banging doors on the parents and throwing tantrums on parents. But this child used not to be so. Now is the worry of the parents. The child was not like that. But the child has changed because of the presence of that game in the house. You see, so the effect of it is there. And to de-escalate it also now has to be done in a wise way and in a tactical way. Talk with the child, let them understand that it's their life that is at stake. Their future is at stake. That is why you are taking the decision you are taking. Discuss it and let them understand it in a loving way. this is the best way to approach it. And I believe you can save your child. Because what is the use of we pray and pray and pray and pray for our children, for all the good things for our children, and yet these devices have become demons in the house and they are destroying the same families that we've been praying for. If you are not bold to deal with it, you are praying, but you've given the devil a back door to your house, a free back door. I mean, this one, non-negotiable, a direct back door to your house. You can do all the prayers you want. Until you shut that back door and you kick the devil out of that house, forget it. You are praying, but they are destroying your children. You are praying, but they are causing harm in your home. And this is the reality that we should understand, that some things is not just about the prayer alone. You have to deal with it. This is a action-related activity that should be done. You should talk about it and act on it. Beyond the prayer, there should be an action. And I believe at least something should be done. Well, for those who would take it serious, I believe this evening's edition was for you. And yeah, that's it. So, okay. Okay, Mrs. Amprachum says, you are right, my brother. They are not only harming them, they are killing them. It's a matter. It's true. It's a serious matter. I mean, as I said, the statistics that I heard at the summit in Accra, very disheartening. Very, very, very disheartening. I said, wow, all this happening in Ghana. And these are even the recorded ones, what they have access to, the Cybersecurity Authority, the CID, and all that. And it's serious. You see, let me just give you a hint, for instance, where I was with the digital forensics aspect of the Ghana police, this lady, and we were on the same panel, so we were having a chat at a point. And, you know, she said something. I knew of part of it before, but she also confirmed it. You know, the whole Ghana, their lab system like that, they have to do the forensics, the main analysis and all that. It's in Accra that they're able to do it, you know. So a lot of the reported cases, for instance, if it happens in Tumu or Tatale, Zabzu, Tatale, up there, there are places where when some things happen there, they can't get it. Because the chain of, from that place, the remote place, to get to the district police command before the region, before Accra, you know, that whole chain, some things will never get to Accra. Some information will never get to Accra. Some statistics will never get to Accra. You know, if you know Ghana, you know that there are some places in Ghana, they are not part of Ghana. I mean, that's the reality. Some places are remote. You go to some police stations, it's like, even computer, nothing. So they can't, then they take some reports, reporting it to Accra, it's not going to reach there. So the statistics is just a fraction of the reality. Just a fraction of the reality. And we are, sexual exploitation of children in the country is amazing. It's amazing. A lot is happening. And parents, please, we just cannot pretend everything is well. No. All is not well at all. And I keep calling, you know, church leaders, pastors, something should be done. This issue should be addressed, women fellowship level, men's fellowship. You know, we cannot just talk about only the spiritual things only. These are things harming and destroying the future of our homes. These same things I'm talking about is what is going to give some parents headaches in the years ahead. And they will say, come back to the church for prayer. So why don't we solve it now so that we don't come back a few years down the line for deliverance and for prayer and for fasting and endless prayer. And it's like now the parents are distressed and they are in I mean, when you can solve it now. Because you see, it's like the seed is being sown. The seed of distraction is being sown in these children. If we don't stop it now and uproot it now, these seeds will become trees that will be now more difficult to cut. You know, we all know it's a fresh plant that is coming up. You can just use your toes to just push it, step on it, and then, I mean, pull it out and all that from the ground. But if you allow that same tender plant to grow, give it some years, it will become a big tree that you need chainsaw and all that machine to pull it down. And to pull it down, I mean, I had to do some work for a company. So we went deep into a forest somewhere in the eastern region some years before COVID, thereabouts, yeah. And they are a licensed lumber firm. And so their reports, they were like cutting one big tree. They were felling one big tree. And that was the first time I was seeing how it was being done. And when that tree fell, as if an earthquake, because the root system for that tree had extended. Serious. I mean, it was like an earthquake. The whole place shook when that big tree was coming down. And you see, that is how, but that same big tree that was coming down and the whole ground was shaking like an earthquake, when it was planted many, many, many years ago, somebody could have just used his fingers, two fingers, to just pull it out, because it's just a tender plant. No resistance, no difficulty. But when it became a matured tree, cutting it, a whole chain of, I mean, a whole team to work on that tree alone. That's how it is. With these same things I'm talking about, if we don't deal with it in the infant stages, it becomes a big monster that to pull it down, you need a whole lot of effort. You need prayer. You need counseling. You need deliverance. You need, I mean, everything. But why wait till then? Perhaps sometimes the harm has been caused already. Why wait till then? And then now look back and say, that had I known. But you can avoid it. I mean, start dealing with it. Start addressing the issue now with your children. Start addressing it. And we are not talking of just children alone. No. It's harming even the youth. So talk to them about it. They should learn to control their usage. They should, because it's affecting the way they are working. It's affecting the way they are thinking. And it's showing. You talk to any employer now about the graduates coming out, and you'll be amazed about some of the things you hear. Oh, yes. But when you listen to these reports and all, you know where the problem starts from. Oh, yeah, you can point to it. You can know that this is the root cause. There's always a root cause. The root cause is there. But we are all pretending that we've not seen it, and we don't know what is causing it. And we are complaining, the youth are like this, the youth are like that, the youth are like this, the teenagers are like this, they are like that. But we are all ignoring the root cause. And this evening is the root cause I'm talking about. I have spoken about the root cause extensively. And I believe there's a reason why the Spirit has allowed me to just talk about it that way. For someone to do something. Oh, yes, because sometimes if you don't do some things at the right time, the consequence is a bit serious. And it's only God who knows tomorrow. He knows that if you don't do something, perhaps you would delay and then something else. So God wants you to know these things and then act on it. And I believe it will be something good for all of us. Your child will do well. Then you'll be happy about it. You know, it's not like those who are not having the freedom to use these devices are not normal. They are fine, no. They are fine. They are normal children. They are enjoying life. I mean, it's not like those who don't enjoy these things, these devices, they are bored or they are some zombie children be? No. They are also living a normal life in their domain without these devices. They are also living a normal life. They are fine. You see, and that's the deception. We think that, oh, if they don't have these things, they will not be fine. If we don't give it to them, they will not be fine. No. It's a deception. Because those who don't have those things and their parents are controlling how they use these devices, they are also living very normal lives and they are enjoying life. But they have an advantage over those who their parents are not controlling them. Oh, yes, they have an advantage. And that's what I'm talking about. Let's ensure that we help the children. Let's ensure we help them. Because we cannot pretend the harm is being caused. As for that one, if you do not know, I'm reminding you, there's a lot of harm being caused by these devices. So the earlier we act on it, the better it will be for us. And the better it will be for you. And yeah, that's it. So God willing, next week we'll get back to the series, to continue the series. This evening I've spoken a bit about these things, and because the reports are not good, as the news item that I read, 3 children. Imagine the parents, you just lose your 3 children, 3 children gone, just because you took their phone. I mean, can you imagine the consequence? Shattered. I mean, they had 4 girls and 3 committed suicide, so it's left of 1. And they were even angry. If you read the full report, they were angry with the parents that they are not allowing them to, add the last born to their group, their passion for the things online and all that. The parents were not allowing them to influence the girl, the last child. So even that crowd were angry that their parents, so they even vowed that, well, their last born, their sister, is not part of them. So like it created a whole friction. It's day 3 versus the one who the parents are not allowing to influence negatively. This is it. This is the effect. And I believe we can avoid these things in our homes here. Okay, Yima says, Brother Eben, the use of phones is harming the entire society. This week, a young lady was run over by a vehicle which failed brakes because the lady had earpiece in her ears and looked intensely on the phone. Yes, this is what we call situational awareness. The person has no idea what is happening around because the person is deeply involved online. The mind is not anywhere near, so cannot see, cannot... sad, though. It's sad. Anyway, so this is Eben. Thank you for tuning in and listening. This is recorded. It will be uploaded. Yeah, you can. It will be uploaded to spiritissues.info and then the Telegram group, issues, spirit issues or issues of life. You can share it with your friends. Perhaps you have a friend, a parent who you see the effects. They are children. You can know. But sometimes, you know, it's difficult to say it. Some people, cocaine. Hey. So, well, for such, you can share this file. And I believe, well, it may help them. And God will use it. So, thank you. Good night. And God bless you.
Great content, rich, positive music from the Ashanti Kingdom through the internet at www.spiritfmonline.com to all parts of Africa, Europe, Asia, Antarctica, Middle East, and the Americas. Spirit FM, positive soul music. Oh.